right. Welcome, everyone, to episode 38 of APS Radio. I'm joined today by Brian Dable. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm good. I appreciate you working with me. I've been dealing with shoulder surgery and kind of out of it the last week, but I feel back to normal, whatever that kind of is. But I'm excited. I'm so excited, actually, to have you on here. You wrote an article a couple weeks ago that came out in Firefighter Nation called Overhaul Without Respiratory Protection Can Cause Hearing Loss, Autotoxic Chemicals to Blame. Pretty cool. I saw this and I was like, oh, this is right up my alley. And I'll get to that later on. But how did this even, come on your radar?
So, good question. Actually, nobody's asked me that to this point. What I do full-time for a living is in environmental health and safety compliance for the manufacturing industry. So I have a full-time, I also have a consulting business on the side and, been in a senior management level, managing safety, primarily OSHA compliance. So one of the OSHA requirements is hearing protection. And it depends if you're above a certain decibel level. And somewhere along the lines, somebody brought up autotoxic chemicals. This was probably about a year ago. And I said, I'd never actually heard of that before. I used to looking at an SDS for a chemical and it'll tell you, what the hazards are, but I never really knew about autotoxic chemicals. And when I saw that, I started looking into it. And as I'm reading it, I said, okay, now I need to know which chemicals are autotoxic because, I have a number of companies I work with. And I'm like, I'm sure I'm dealing with one of these somewhere. I just don't know it. So start looking into it. We had a solvent that we were using in one place that was, and I was like, oh, we actually just got rid of that for other reasons. So that was good. And as I'm reading through it, I'm going, a lot of these are the ones that are in smoke. So I'm like, let me look into this. So I start looking into if anybody's ever done studies on this. And I found one down in Florida. And I just started putting all the pieces together. And I said, all these firefighters have hearing loss. We have all this exposure to smoke. Everybody's talking about cancer prevention right now. But really, everything that you're absorbing or inhaling is not only a cancer risk, but also you're inhaling these autotoxic chemicals are going into your bloodstream and they're attacking your hearing. So, that's kind of where it started. And I've been writing articles for Fire Engineering for probably a couple of years. I've only done a few so far, but I found I really enjoy doing it because, one of the reasons is it allows me to educate myself a little further because you're going to write an article, you got to do some research. It's not just, what you know already. And then, when the article goes out, I've been getting a lot of positive feedback from people all over the country. Just not even just this article, but I wrote one on NFPA 704 prior to this, and somebody out in California reached out to me, and I was like, oh, it's cool that made reach out there. And so I just, I like the interaction and getting stuff out there and sharing my knowledge. So, when I started looking into all this stuff to put this article together, it just kind of blew up from there.
Yeah. I think, when you join the fire service, it's almost an assumption that you're going to have some hearing loss. And I think that assumption though is really thinking about the sirens, the chainsaws, just all the loud noises that we encounter on a daily basis, for decades, throughout our career. And that's what, causes the hearing loss. That is, I think what in general we think about, but what you're bringing to the table is saying, yes, all that happens. That all affects us negatively, but just the chemicals we're exposed to can cause our hearing loss too. And that, I think that really, there's a lot of stuff to that. And cause then, like you said, it brings up just like, it's another reason why, probably most importantly, we need to be wearing our PACs when we're doing overhaul.
And so the key thing too, is with these chemicals, if you're exposed to autotoxic chemicals, which as a firefighter, you will be, it's just inevitable. It's the severity is based on the frequency. So like for me, I'm part of a volunteer department. We run about 100, maybe 120 calls a year. Of those, maybe 10 are fires. So we're not exposed at a high interval versus somebody in the FDNY is going to be exposed probably daily. Then you have the dose of what you're exposed to. So, what's in that smoke, what's actually burning, how much of that smoke you've been exposed to. There's so many factors, but also aside from that, the autotoxic chemicals destroy your auditory nerve. And then from there, that allows those loud noises to have a greater impact. So if before you were going to be exposed to a Q siren and a chainsaw every day, and maybe you would have had hearing loss in 20 years, those autotoxic chemicals worsening your auditory nerve and making it easier to damage have now sped that up to, let's say, 10 years. So, again, that also, those numbers are not solid. That's just for an example. But depending on, somebody like me that's exposed 10 times a year versus somebody who's exposed 365 times a year, that those numbers could be drastically different.
Yeah. And what are some of these autotoxic chemicals that you're referring to?
So the main ones that are in all smoke, carbon monoxide and hydrogen cyanide. Then in addition to that, benzene, styrene, toluene, or toluene, people have called it different things. Still don't know how to pronounce that one to this day. But, it depends on what's burning for those additional chemicals. Like, you're not going to have benzene in all smoke, but benzene comes from gasoline also. Styrene from some of the furnishings that burn. And there's numerous others. But, think about it. It's not even just smoke. You go to a carbon monoxide alarm and the guys are going in and they say, all right, our meter is going to alert at 35 ppm. That's the OSHA's threshold to, evacuate and go on air. Yes, up to a 35 ppm is safe, but it's still doing something to you. And then in addition to that, I've seen guys, they walk in and they won't go on air even after 35 ppm, because in all reality, you're not going to have severe health effects till way beyond that. So it could be up to 50 and guys like, I don't need the air. I'm fine. We're just going to vent. But you're breathing that in, and that's also contributing. So even though it's not smoke, you're in that carbon monoxide many other times throughout the year, for some departments more than they are in smoke.
And we're absorbing this stuff into our skin too, correct?
So the two main routes for autotoxic chemicals, routes of exposure, would be absorption and inhalation. So inhalation is pretty clear. That's usually the most severe. It goes right to your bloodstream quickest. Absorption, what I tell everybody is, if you're so focused on cancer prevention, what you're doing is really adequate to prevent this as well. There's nothing extra you should be doing. That wearing the proper PPE, inspecting it to make sure that it's not compromised, making sure that you use it where you should be using it. And I'll go a step further on that with the respiratory protection. Overhaul is a big one. We could touch on that a little bit too. Gross decon. So that's something that's still new to me. Again, we're a smaller department, so we don't have a lot of fire events, but a lot of departments now are deconning their guys before they get back on the rig. Just basic water and a scrub brush, or there's many ways to do it. Deconning all that garbage off your gear. We had an incident, wasn't even it was a chimney fire, probably first week of January this year. We're coming down the road, and it's just one of those days that the weather allowed the smoke to hang real low, and we're going up for a chimney fire, and we had smoke three blocks away, like thick. I'm like, what the hell is going on? This house must be on fire. We get there, it's just this small chimney fire. It's just the way the smoke is hanging. But it was hanging so low and so severe, our truck, just from driving down the street with the windows down, smelled like this stuff, the cab, for weeks. And we're like, we got to clean this truck out, because all that stuff sitting in the cabs. Now, 2 days later, you go an activated fire alarm. You're sitting in that stuff. It's just, you got to decon it and get it all off of you.
Exactly. You mentioned earlier, you mentioned the Florida study. Could you kind of summarize that as well, just so everybody can know kind of what you're basing a lot of this stuff off of?
Sure. So there was a study I found in Florida. I don't recall the exact name of the departments. I believe it was a regional study. So it was multiple departments. They did a focus group. They had a study done, 214 firefighters across all different ages, lengths of service. And it was on hearing loss, not specifically autotoxic chemicals, but hearing loss in general. And they took these 214 firefighters and they did audiometric exams with them to see what their hearing levels were. And So normally in the OSHA world, you're required to do a baseline and then an annual thereafter if you're exposed to a hazardous level of noise. And that'll kind of show you the hearing loss. There's adjustments in there for, you know, because obviously you're going to lose hearing as you age in general. So they take that into account. And they have what's called a standard threshold shift. So they'll see if you have a significant amount of hearing loss. And they measure it on different frequencies. There's a lot of technicality. When they did this study, they found that out of the 214 firefighters, can't recall the exact percentage I put in the article. I should have wrote it down for today, but the majority, it was way over 50%, had some hearing loss, and then a good amount of them had mild to profound hearing loss just 10 years into their career. And a lot of these guys are retiring with significant hearing loss, requiring hearing aids. And then, you know, real quick, I'll get into the three things that you can situs, which is like a ringing in the ears. So it's almost disrupting your hearing. So it's hard for you to hear things. It's hard to make out words that sound similar. And to a point, I've even seen that in myself. My wife is always saying to me, she's like, I'm not saying that again. You should start listening to me. You know, they always think you're not listening to them. And sometimes I'm like, no, I really didn't hear what you said. And I'm in the same room as her. And if there's a TV in the background or a fan running or something, it makes it difficult for me to make out some of the things she's
It's
saying.
like you wrote the article just to say, see, here's proof. Like
No, you know what? It was funny. I
I
as I was doing it, I'm like, man, I see some of these problems myself. So when you have tinnitus, it's hard to make out those words that sound similar, and it's like the most mild form of hearing loss. Then you have just straight up hearing loss where, you know, it could be one ear, both ears, and there's really no rhyme or reason to how it occurs. So they've seen it where somebody loses hearing completely in one ear and not at all in the other, or half and half. There's no rhyme or reason. And then you have also some cognitive issues that can come from hearing loss. So sometimes they found that people, so really, let me back up for a second. The third thing that hearing loss does is it affects your balance. So there's a lot of people that when they experience hearing loss, they have a balance issue, which for firefighters can be detrimental because if, let's say, you're up on a roof venting, I mean, your balance is everything, especially with an air pack on. You fall off the roof, you're pretty screwed. So, the balance loss specifically tends to link to cognitive decline in retirement, so that they find that it affects the brain in a way that you experience rapid or more rapid cognitive decline in your elderly years versus if you didn't have that hearing loss. So, you know, you could be inhaling these chemicals, experiencing hearing loss, and then having cognitive decline in your senior years, and all because of breathing some stuff in you shouldn't be.
Yeah. You know, and another thing you mentioned, and this is where I think I'll go on my soapbox for a minute, but I think it's all relative to the all the audience out there, is you mentioned difficulty listening or hearing in with background noise. And that's where I have my personal hearing issues. And you know, that's why I love this article so much, is because it's actually, you know, it's putting it all out there. And I didn't have, I wish I had this article back then. I could tell you, I would take your NFPA 1585, soon to be, or excuse me, 1582, soon to be 1580, physical, the department hearings, fine. I would go to my own audiologist and I'd sit in the booth, pass that test, no problem. And, but at the same time, I know, especially when I'm out, that I'm struggling. I'm becoming a lip reader, and I finally got to the point. This is about, I would say, I started having issues about 10 years after I was on the job, and I wasn't wearing my pack back then. And I finally, you know, I passed another one of the hearing tests with my regular audiologist, and I was like, something's wrong. This is bullshit. I don't care what your test says. I can't hear right. And I finally, he ended up sending me to, referring me to the Ohio State Audiology Center. But it took me 13 months to even get in and get evaluated. And when I did go there, it was a lot different. It was much different than just sitting in a booth or having these little headphones on you and pressing a button whenever you hear a tone in your left or right ear. It was all sorts of different tests. And they even were able to do readings, like sensors in my ears to check the follicles. And they drilled me for about 45 minutes, including the background noise. And the doctor there is amazing. And she teaches really throughout the world about this stuff. And she told me after the test, she said, everything you've been saying is the truth. Like you have hearing loss. You have it when it comes to background noise. She said, we, you know, read your ears with the follicle sensor thing, and your follicles are dormant. They're not there, and you need those to hear background noise. And so I ended up with hearing aids. She told me then, she said, I've seen something like this before. And this is, we're going back now to 2017. And she said, I had a family that was a victim to a house fire, and they had significant exposure to carbon monoxide. And all of them, the whole family, had these same issues. And so she said, it's what you do for a living, it's your job. Your exposures is what caused your hearing loss. But I mentioned earlier, I was able to get hearing aids. I wasn't able to get them through the workers' comp. Luckily, the state of Ohio had a program where I was able to get them. But hearing aids are expensive. And it sucks to not really be able to, at least in my state, to even get them through workers' comp when you can show that it's a work-related injury. But I say all this to say, man, I really, it took a long time for me to get the proper diagnosis and a proper help. And it was only because I was tenacious, or pain in the ass, whatever you want to say, that I finally got the results. But even when I did, people thought I was crazy. So I love you. I love this article, because I was about to say it proves I'm not crazy, but that's not fair. I can't say that.
That's at least not in this aspect. You're not.
And then this one, I'm not making stuff up for once. And I hope what comes from this is just the awareness. And with that, I hope that it also leads to better testing. Because again, I was so frustrated passing test after test after test when I knew I was struggling. So I hope that something comes out of this to where there's actually better testing for us. Are you aware of anything else out there that?
So there's a few things that you can be doing for, you know, it takes a department that really wants to focus on this to do it, because there's no regulations around it. So the other day, I think I told you, I did a podcast with Scott Orr for Code 3, and he was asking me about this too. And the funny thing is, OSHA does not regulate hearing loss for ototoxic chemicals. They only require a hearing conservation program and these testing for noise above a certain threshold. They don't mention ototoxic chemicals in there at all. You can monitor for this by doing the same thing, by having that hearing conservation program where you're doing training with the employees to make them aware, providing the proper PPE for those hazards, where you are doing that annual testing to catch it early. So if you have an issue from 1 year to the next, you're finding out within a year versus 10 years when you have significant damage. The other thing, obviously, that we talked about a little before is using your SCBA. During overhaul, especially, that's when a lot of guys aren't using it. You can bring gas meters in if you think that, you know, you've ventilated enough that you can go in there and don't need it. And if you just put the fire out, you're going to need it. But, if you want to monitor for carbon monoxide, hydrogen cyanide, you can determine if you're at a safe level. Third thing would be, obviously, gross decon, like we talked about, so you're not absorbing it. Make sure you shower after you take your gear off. But the The biggest problem with these chemicals is, one, nobody's aware of this. That was part of the reason we put the article together, make sure that people are aware. Now, you said that your workers' comp denied paying for the hearing. Did they deny the claim altogether, or they just don't cover hearing aids?
Oh man, you're making me think back. I believe you can get hearing aids through them, but I did not have enough evidence to show that I needed those hearing aids. But in their eyes, you
So,
know.
I don't know how the workers' comp laws work in Ohio because I do New York. I deal with, well, New Jersey, and I deal with New York also. And every state's very different. But normally, a doctor making that statement is enough. Sometimes they can send you to their own doctor, which might be the issue. Again, I don't know Ohio. But one of the things, a lot of the bigger departments are doing this, and this is something I'm trying to get smaller departments to do, and we're starting to do it in my department now, create an exposure form. So, obviously, we have an exposure control plan under OSHA for, you're exposed to bloodborne pathogens, but we could expand that. So we just have a quick one-page form that when you come back from a fire or anything where you're exposed to any sort of chemical, smoke, you have to fill out this exposure report. And so it goes in your file. So down the road, let's say, for example, you had this hearing loss, you could pull up 10 years of exposures. And show that documentation. And the exposure form we have covers bloodborne pathogens, smoke, different chemicals, even, let's say you're using an extinguisher and you're exposed to the agent in the extinguisher other than the water ones. What that does is it gives you that record. So you can go back and in your case, prove the exposure.
I was able to do that with actually my cancer fight, but the hearing loss, it was not going well. And but luckily, again, I found we have in Ohio, we have a it's called Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities, and their whole role is to get people working that have disabilities, like help them out with whatever adaptions they need, or keep people working. And that's kind of where I fell in, and they were able to take care of that. But these hearing aids, again, are, I mean, depending on which ones you get, 4,000 to, and above a pair.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're, and so I was looking at that coming out of pocket, and then, they're only going to last 5 or 6 years, and then you got another one. So I got pretty lucky with that in my state. But it was just, I think the biggest problem for me is just the inability to get the proper diagnosis. Since that time, I've realized that your typical audiologist does not have the ability to test for a lot of this stuff. That's why I had to go to Ohio State. The other only other place in my state to do these type of testings is University of Cincinnati. So it's all these larger universities that are training future audiologists that are really able to do this and go in depth. And I just got lucky being paired with Ohio State and with Dr. Gail Whitelaw, who's just amazing with all this stuff. And since that time, just to show too, like, when I go out and I talk about this, people are like, "Hey, I think I'm having the same stuff." And it happens more often than you would think. And I've sent, I don't even know how many people, I've lost track of how many people that I've sent to Ohio State and have gotten the proper diagnosis and gotten the proper help. But just getting there is such a pain in the butt. And they were dealing with the same things I was. They go to the audiologist and they're like, "No, you're good. You have your firefighter physical, you're good." And you're sitting there going, "Bullshit. No, I'm not." And so I think you writing this article, doing this shows, get on everybody's shows, get this out there as much as you can, because I truly believe there are thousands of firefighters that are dealing with this and have not been able to get the proper assistance. And that
Oh,
just sucks.
what's outstanding to me is that story you just told about that family, that they had a one-time significant exposure and they all suffered from it. So if that could happen after one time, just think about the repeat exposures and how that affects everybody. even if it's smaller doses. That's all adding up to way beyond what that family was exposed to.
This mirrors cancer to me, as far
It
as
is. It's the
exposures
same
go.
Controls for a lot of it.
Chronic exposure, everything adding up, or just one nasty, nasty, nasty fire, and that's all it takes. And that's all it takes with cancer, but it's also all it takes, it sounds like, with this hearing loss, too.
Yep.
Man, as this is crazy stuff, but again, I'm so thankful that you took the time and actually wrote this out. And I don't know if you comprehend how significant this is, but I think this will help out a significant amount of firefighters that you won't even ever meet them. So I hope you take a second and just.
I hope so, but what I hope more is that, you know, I'm not a doctor by any means. Wish I was, I'd probably be making a lot more money. But if
Yes.
you can get some of those doctors at Ohio State or anybody else, and if you're not just them, but you know, other people that are medical professionals to do studies and document this the right way so that when it does occur, firefighters can go back and get taken care of through workers' comp. Or they can start to mandate that firefighters have to be enrolled in a hearing conservation program. OSHA puts in place requirements for ototoxic chemicals to require a hearing conservation program. Funny enough, so I'm not sure if you're aware, OSHA is right now going over the whole 1910-156 standard, which is currently called fire brigades and just applies to private fire brigades. And right now, they're only able to enforce fire department compliance through piecemeal regulation, like respiratory protection and, you know, all this random stuff. They want to put it all in one place. So they're trying to revise that standard called emergency response. And I'm putting together a course right now that I'm going to offer to my local fire departments, working on some articles for fire engineering that I haven't submitted yet, going over what's going to be coming in this regulation, what needs to be done. It's extensive and it's going to be crippling for some volunteer fire departments to comply with up front for a couple of reasons. One, they don't have the funds. Two, they don't have the time. And three, they don't have somebody on staff with the knowledge to even where to start. But one of the things that's in there is they're going to be requiring that exposure reporting I just talked about where you track your exposures because if you're exposed. Now, right now, the proposed number is at least 15 times a year or more to byproducts of fire or smoke, you have to be enrolled in an NFPA-compliant medical surveillance program, which a lot of departments are not doing. Now, that 15 number is up for debate. It might be lower, it might be higher. But 15 times a year, whether you're using respiratory protection or not, that could be car fires, house fires, a garbage can fire. You hit 15 times a year, you have to be in that conservation program. And they, funny enough, did not require that you get a hearing exam as part of that. So they're worried about the cancer end, but they're still not worrying about the hearing end. So that's only going to happen if medical professionals get behind this and put out studies and back it up because, you know, the workers' comp company doesn't care what I have to say. They care what doctors have to say. So we need to get the right people to pursue it.
Yeah. If only I knew somebody that was on NFPA 1580.
It's not too hard to find out. Start making some phone calls.
I'm on it.
That's... Oh. I didn't know that.
I'm on it, and I brought this up, and it just got blown off. It got ignored. So that's why, again, like, I'm with you. Let's get some more research out there, and let's really bring this to the forefront. And it shouldn't be that big of a deal because, as you said on here, we should be doing the same type of initiatives for the hearing loss as we are to prevent cancer. They go hand in hand. So, I mean, it's all the more reason to do that. I mean, it's all the more reason. Throw in reproductive issues. We're learning more and more how, you know, these chemicals are affecting us, you know, and our offspring. Like, there's all the reasons in the world to actually wear your SCBAs. It's just a matter of actually doing it. And a lot of that is really, when it comes down to it, it's up to the individual to to choose to be responsible and actually put on their pack and keep it on.
Yeah, I'd like to say I'm not part of the problem, but you know, I know I've done it before too. I think we all have, where you know you want to conserve that 30-minute cylinder. So when you're standing in the front yard and you're getting hit with smoke, you're like, I don't need this. You might not need the SCBA if you're standing outside, but then move out of that space. Don't just stand there and take it in. And everybody likes to have their gear, you know, they call it, you know, my gear looks all salty or burned up, and you know, you're sitting in chemicals in every run that you go on.
That's right. Or even being the operator on scene, or the chief, or safety officer. Like, yeah, you're eating that smoke and you have no protection every time. You're right up front and you eat it, and stuff's going to add up, and it's going to pan out one way or the other. You know, there's no avoiding it, I think, at this point. But dude, I can't wait to get the show out there and really see where this evolves and where it goes. But I think you putting the time and effort into this, I applaud you. I looked into stuff years ago and I didn't really get anywhere. So I'm glad you were able to do this, and I'm trying my best to help you get this out there, because it is super important.
Well, maybe distribute it to your NFPA committee next. Would be a good place to start.
I think I can do that for sure. I have that ability. But man, Brian, I appreciate you making the time for me, working with me. I know I've been a pain in the butt, but and just keep doing what you're doing, because it's just tremendous, and all of the fire service is going to benefit from your articles and your knowledge, especially when this new OSHA stuff that's coming out. That's all going to be above everybody's head. So you being able to break that down into what it truly means is going to assist everybody as well.
No problem. And maybe we could talk in the future on that too. You set up some time.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully my shoulder will be good and everything else will be good, and we'll go right into it, man. But with that, I'll let you get out of here. And I should ask, if anybody wanted to reach out, learn more about this from you, what's the best way to contact you?
So I'll give you my side business email, the consulting business I have. It's bgdsafety@gmail.com. Or you know, Mine Hill Fire Department. You could, if you're local, hit me up at the Mine Hill Firehouse in Mine Hill, New Jersey. You know, we can go from there.
Perfect, perfect. And I think with that, let's get out of here. He's Brian, and I'm Jim, and we'll catch you next month. Take care, all of you out there.
Thanks for having me.